technology. Yet, they still haven't figured out that when you go to the bathroom, they're still wiping themselves with paper. All this advancement, think about how advanced they've become. They're trying to go to Mars. They're trying to take over Saturn. They're trying to do all this stuff. Their cars are trying to be self-driven. Yet when they go to do the most lowest form of human nature, the call of nature, they are still wiping themselves and cleaning themselves with paper. They're uncivilized. Do not be tricked and deceived by their technology. Do not be tricked and deceived by their philosophies and their westernizations and their ideas. At the end of the day, they are still backwards. Allah has sent us to these nations to civilize them. That's why Allah has sent us, to civilize these people. Yet the media makes us look like the barbaric ones. The reason they don't want you to be successful is because they're jealous of what you have. The Christians, jealous of what you have. Their nations, their religions are dying. So what they had to do, they had to change their religion. You don't believe me? We went to churches. And they're now having the LGBT flags over there. A'udhu billah. Imagine, your business, your religion is dying so much that the only thing that you could do is go and get some help from the LGBT. That's just the condition you've become in. Because their religion is dying. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has sent us into the nations to guide these people from the darkness into the light.
Yeah, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I mean, just take a look over here. You've got what appears to be a youth group, maybe. Nothing but a bunch of young boys sitting in the crowd, minus this one older man here that maybe he's another speaker. I don't know. Other than that, I mean, it looks like nothing but a bunch of young boys are sitting there. And that's the message that they are injecting into young Americans' heads over here in the United States of America. Good morning and welcome to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I'm your host, Matt Tardio. Today's episode, ladies and gentlemen, this live broadcast is being sponsored by GhostBed. Now, we have a serious discussion to be had this morning. On top of, you know, the famine review committee coming out and declaring a famine over inside of Gaza, we also have issues with Russia. Russia came out today, their foreign minister Lavrov, basically stating that they're not coming to the table for peace talks. They're not going to have any negotiations whatsoever until they can settle on things. And the guy actually blames Zelensky for the entire situation. You heard that right. He's blaming Zelensky. It's not the fact that Russia invaded their country. It's not the fact that they continue on with this war. It's not the fact that they just bombed a U.S. factory yesterday, which those of you who are unaware and maybe missed yesterday's broadcast, let me just catch you up to par real quick.
So you can still see the smoke and the burning of this American investment here in Western Ukraine. We are very close to the border with the EU. And just earlier this morning, Russian missiles hit this location here. This is an American company, Flex, one of the biggest American investments here in Ukraine. And look at it, totally destroyed. This is one of the most safest parts of Ukraine. The Transcarpathia, this is the other side of the mountains, the Carpathians. And this has been really a safe part. And today, total destruction brought by Russia, by Vladimir Putin's missiles. And this is the time when literally earlier this week, days where a week hasn't passed, when President Trump met with President Zelensky, EU leaders, but also less than a week ago, he met with President Putin. It's here. It just shows that Russia is not interested in peace. Russia is destroying American business. Russia is destroying Ukraine. This is humiliating for American business. I think the good news is that there were no employees. 600 people were working here earlier today over at the night shift. And luckily, everyone's alive. Because the company really adhered to all stringent health and safety measures. So this is from Zakarpattia, from Lukashevo. The firefighters are still working. Really, they're the first responders are still here over 12 hours. And you can still see the smoke.
So this situation occurred, for those of you that don't know, about 30 to 36 hours ago over inside of Ukraine when Russia launched a massive freaking drone and cruise missile attack on Ukraine. One of the targets they struck was this. It is the Flex factory over inside of Ukraine. It is the largest U.S.-owned company inside of Ukraine. This company is so big, it's traded on the NASDAQ. Let me say that again. This company is so big, it's traded on the NASDAQ. It takes up 5.4 kilometers squared worth of real estate inside of Ukraine. They produce coffee pots. They produce crock pots. That's the type of crap that this company produces. And immediately following, you know, that basically the summit that took place over at the White House last week, we have this. This happens, right? This happens after, you know, Putin and freaking Lavrov. Nobody makes a dang statement other than, you know, we have these other countries that are saying they're willing to accept Russia and Zelensky. They're willing to host both of them for these talks. And yet we get nothing out of them. And instead of moving towards peace, prior to the talks, Russia launches a failed offensive operation, by the way. And then when that fails, they end up not only launching a massive freaking cruise missile strike and drone attack on Ukraine, but they go after a U.S.-based company that is all the way in the West. This thing is so far from the front line, it's not even funny. And we didn't even mention the Shahed drones that smashed down over inside of Poland and caught a bunch of crap on fire. This was Russia's answer. Even though, you know what? I'm going to let her do the speaking for herself. I think I have that clip right here. Yes, I do. Yes, I most certainly do. Here is the spokesperson for the White House when asked specifically whether or not Russia was going to come to the table.
We'll provide you with details as soon as we can.
Just following up on Kristen's question, I understand that the White House is working and allies are working to make this meeting happen, but did Putin promise to do a meeting with Zelensky, a direct meeting, in the coming weeks?
He has, and I just answered that question for you. We'll provide you with details as soon.
Okay, so Putin promised to come to the table in the upcoming weeks to Donald Trump. Now, it was documented several times that, like, Trump just straight up during that meeting, you know, when they were like, let's call Zelensky in a little bit. And Trump's like, no, we're calling him now. And like called over to frickin' Moscow and woke his butt up at like frickin' 2 a.m. and got him on the phone to confirm these things. Daryl Seek coming in, becoming a true supporter. Good to have you, my friend. Good to have you. Incog Faraday came in, gifting out 5 Speak the Truth memberships. Rossinator, welcome back. Hell yeah, brother. Welcome back, Rossinator, becoming a true supporter. Good to have you, man. So yeah, it was confirmed. They got Putin on the phone, and that meeting was held. It was documented. There was even press there that were taking pictures of this crap. The White House actually released photographs of it going down. Well, today, Sergey Lavrov decided to come out with Meet the Press, and let's listen to his statements about whether or not Putin's going to come to the table.
There is no meeting planned, and I'm not challenging this. But you cannot, I think, understand what I am saying. Putin is ready to meet with Zelensky. When the agenda would be ready for a summit, and this agenda is not ready at all. There is no meeting planned, and I'm not.
Now I know that was kind of hard to make out, you know, what exactly he was talking about, but he's saying currently there is no meeting planned because there's no agenda. I want to make that very clear because he's speaking in broken English. Clearly it's not his first language, right? He's Russian. So at least he's speaking English, but he says there's no meeting planned because there's no agenda. And as soon as that agenda is ready, then he's willing to come to the table. Now that within itself isn't very telling. It doesn't tell you why Russia ended up turning it down, why Russia would want to turn it down. But these later clips that we have of him absolutely describe why they chose not to. And guess who they blamed? They blamed Zelensky.
President Putin said clearly that he is ready to meet, provided this meeting is really going to have an agenda, presidential agenda.
So that's a big if. There's no meeting planned, Mr. Foreign Minister. That's a big if. You're saying there's no meeting planned right now.
Kristen, I'm awfully sorry. You're not listening. There is no meeting planned. And I'm not challenging this, but you cannot, I think, understand what I am saying. Putin is ready to meet with Zelensky. When the agenda would be ready for a summit, and this agenda is not ready at all. President Trump suggested after Anchorage several points which we share, and on some of them we agreed to show some flexibility.
Okay.
When President Trump brought those issues to the meeting in Washington, with Zelensky present together with his European sponsors, he clearly indicated, it was very clear to everybody, that there are several principles which Washington believes must be accepted.
So there you go. He goes back and he says, listen, you know, we accepted these different things out of Trump. Trump said that there's certain things and we're going to agree on certain things, and there's some things that we can remain flexible on. But it's Zelensky that basically fooled Trump and basically turned back on everything. And I'm not crazy. I'm pretty sure I just heard
would that. Be ready for a summit. And this agenda is not ready at all. President Trump suggested after Anchorage several points which we share, and on some of them we agreed to show some flexibility.
President Trump suggested some things and agreements that we share. On other points, there was things that they said could remain flexible. Okay.
Okay.
When President Trump brought those issues to the meeting in Washington, with Zelensky present together with his European sponsors, he clearly indicated, it was very clear to everybody, that there are several principles which Washington believes must be accepted.
So there are several principles that Washington believes must be accepted. Okay. So he brings all that crap up to Zelensky.
That there are several principles which Washington believes must be accepted, including no NATO membership, including the discussion of territorial issues. And Zelensky said no to everything. He even
bam, and there it is. And there it is, right there. He said Zelensky said no to everything. As if Zelensky's got really a say when it goes down to all of this stuff. So what Lavrov is suggesting is that Putin, or that Trump essentially like did a two-faced maneuver on him. That's what Lavrov is suggesting, and that Zelensky turned down all of the points that Russia had agreed to. That right there is exactly what Lavrov just suggested. That the United States and Zelensky basically got Russia to make it appear as if they were going to do certain things, and then Zelensky backs out of everything. And that they still pushed forward and called Putin and said, look, Zelensky is not agreeing to this stuff. Are you willing to set a meeting? And or maybe they lied to him. I don't know. But that's what Lavrov's suggesting. And so that is the reason that they ended up doing that. Now, you couple that with the fact that they just blew the crap out of the largest U.S. factory in Ukraine. Again, traded on the NASDAQ, takes up 5.4 thousand square kilometers over inside of Ukraine. What the hell, man? You don't get to come back and bomb U.S. factories and blame Zelensky for not coming to the dang table. And I highly doubt that was something that Zelensky had turned down and said absolutely not. Because then you would be saying that the NATO Secretary General is lying and that every single person that was over at that meeting is also lying, because they all came out making several statements about different security guarantees, saying that these different countries are going to have security guarantees. Hell, even Trump came out and talked about those different security guarantees. And today, the NATO Secretary General is back inside of Ukraine, and they're making even more statements. So it certainly appears as if Russia is trying to spin the narrative and doesn't want to come back to the frickin' table. You heard it straight out of frickin' Lavrov's own mouth. What does Zelensky have to say?
Коли Росія піднімає питання щодо гарантії безпеки, я чесно кажучи, поки що не знаю, хто їм загрожує. Вони на нас напали, вони на нашій стороні. Я не зовсім розумію, які гарантії потрібні агресору. Гарантії чого? Тому для мене це поки що не зрозуміло, в чому зміст реальний. Я думаю, що партнери в Європі хочуть, щоб війна не повторювалася. Єдиний тригер цьому – це Росія.
Zelensky didn't state, I want to join NATO. Zelensky didn't state, I'm going to be joining NATO. Zelensky didn't state any of that crap. All he said was security guarantees. The same exact thing, the exact same thing that every other person at that summit last week also stated. Nobody, and I mean nobody, had mentioned Ukraine joining NATO. Nobody even came remotely close to stating that. Not even remotely close. And so, who the hell is lying here? Are we to believe that all of these other nations and that the NATO Secretary General and everybody else is lying when they say that they're going to have, like, basically a group of countries that are going to come together and somehow make this work? Or are we to believe freaking Putin and Lavrov? You know, the same guys that said that they didn't invade Crimea, that nobody knew who the little green men were, then later came out and said that they did. The same guys that launched their freaking incursion into eastern Ukraine and then full-blown attacked the country under the guise of a special military operation when they had over 200,000 troops stacked up on the Ukrainian border swearing they weren't going to invade. And then they did it anyways. Those are the people that we're supposed to believe. The ones that claim they're going in to denazify Ukraine because Ukraine was on the cusp of joining NATO. Dude, Ukraine isn't even remotely close to joining NATO right now. Even if they wanted to today, if the war ended today, they wouldn't be anywhere remotely close to joining NATO. So many things have to go into place, and Ukraine is so far off. Were NATO troops inside of Ukraine? Yes, they were. Were they training Ukrainians? Absolutely. Why? Because Russia had already invaded the east. Russia had already stolen Crimea. Russia had done so much, it's not even funny. Including meddling in Ukrainian elections. They had already violated the Budapest Memorandum in the early 2000s. And they continue to do again in the next election. And that's well documented. And even then, when they stole Crimea and when they invaded the freaking east, they claim that it is NATO. That's the problem. So, to be clear, you go back in time and you go back. And if you guys don't believe me, go look up like the Helsinki summit with Russia invading the freaking or interfering with Ukrainian elections. This is very well documented. Russia has violated the Budapest Memorandum before NATO troops even stepped ground inside of Ukraine. Before they even touched ground inside of Ukraine, Russia had violated the Budapest Memorandum. Period. And the Budapest Memorandum doesn't state that, you know, the people that are assigned to it are going to go over and protect Ukraine, nor was it even remotely close to being on the table that this would happen. So the real question is what the hell is Russia's agenda? What is it that they want? Because if they all they wanted to do, even if you take it and you say the separatists in eastern Ukraine wanted to get up and get out, and that Russia was going in to defend them because Ukraine was bombing the crap out of them. Even if you want to buy into that entire narrative, that that's what they did, then wouldn't they come to the table for mission accomplished, that they protected those people? What country has NATO ever invaded? Illegally. Not a single one. The only time Article 5 of NATO was called up was underneath the United States of America, after the United States was freaking attacked. And that was justified on an international basis. And you could even look at international law, and you could just say as an individual country, whether or not Ukraine's got like the authority in order to defend itself, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or whether or not other nations can go in. Yes, they do. Just based on that information of what Russia had done. So ask yourself, can you actually trust Putin? Can you actually trust Lavrov? No, you can't, because they do one thing and say another thing. Hell, they won't even call it a war that they've engaged in. It's a special military operation. And their goalpost continues to shift over time. They tried to sack Kiev. They did. They tried to sack Kiev. Make no mistake about it. And they failed at doing that. Then they tried to occupy pretty much everything east of the Dnipro. And they failed at that. they got their butts pushed all the way back to the present day zero line. And it's remained relatively unchanged since then. And it's come at a very, very high cost to Putin. Very, very high cost to Putin. Very, very high cost to the Russian people. I guess I can't even say it's coming at a high cost to Putin, but the Russian people it has. Taking a toll on well over 1 million casualties. Easily. Ukraine's probably pushing a quarter mil between killed and wounded. I know those numbers might sound unbelievable to some people, that how could the Russian military do that? But it makes perfect sense when you talk about military operations and assaulting force versus defending force. Especially when you throw in trenches, you throw in drone warfare, and everything else that goes into it. Those are just the facts, and those aren't Ukrainian numbers. Those are estimates by U.S. and U.K. intelligence officials. So to come out and state that somehow Ukraine should be giving this up and that Russia can be trusted when they can't even be trusted at all. We can go back and we can listen to exactly what Lavrov just said. They can't even be trusted to have diplomatic talks with the President of the United States, the UN Secretary General, and several other nations to actually come to the flipping table and to actually be truthful about it. And then they turn around and they spit in the frickin' face of the U.S. who says that they're going to take care of it. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General arrives over inside of Kiev, speaking with Zelensky and several other people. Let's listen to some things that, UN Secretary General has stated over time.
And it is too early to exactly say what will be the outcome. But clearly the U.S. will be involved. Clearly we do not want a repeat of the Budapest Memorandum or the Minsk Agreement. These security guarantees should be holding. And as I said, as a second layer on top of building the Ukrainian armed forces after the war, moving forward, and NATO will be heavily involved there. We are already, of course, heavily involved through our command in Wiesbaden, which is helping Ukraine to stay in the fight now, but also to help Ukraine to develop its armed forces as a sovereign, a proud nation going forward after a peace deal. So NATO is proudly involved in all of that.
Somebody asked in the comment what NATO is doing about the Russian drone that crashed over inside of Poland. Absolutely nothing. Look, this isn't the first time that Russian munitions had made their way into a NATO country. As a matter of fact, Poland's actually been hit several times by Russian munitions, cruise missiles, and drones. And nothing's been done about it since. Poland continues to do its best to defend its border. And every single time that something like that pops off, and it happens. I remember the first time those cruise missiles struck, I was inside of the gym working out when I got a call from a friend of mine. Talking about, hey, just heard through the intel channels that, a freaking cruise missile just slammed into freaking Poland. And then about 20 or 30 minutes later, it starts popping up on the TV in the gym. And I was like, well, that's it. There's Article 5. Shit. Let's see if people were killed. Let's see what ends up happening. Let's see what ends up coming out of it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. This is a much smaller munition. But Poland's going to get sick of it. And so what Poland has been doing is launching aircraft and doing their best to defend their borders. Like, this is, you want to know what their response is to that? Their response to that drone that just crashed into Poland the same time that the U.S. factory was getting bombed over inside of Ukraine. Their response has been to simply try to defend their border and to shoot crap out of the sky. They'll launch aircraft. They'll do all sorts of stuff. But as far as taking care of Russia, they won't do it. They won't, because NATO doesn't want to get involved, no matter how many times I can say it. Like, these are essentially peaceniks, right? Like, over inside of NATO, they think that they can rely, on this flag right back over here, standing behind the Secretary General, is the whole reason that they can't go. And no matter how many times I say it, there's some men that can't be reasoned with. There's some people that you literally can't negotiate with. Right. And it's the same thing, as far as I'm concerned, with these Russians and with the Islamic jihadists that we're about to talk about here in a minute. You can't reason with them. You have to continue to freaking fight. Because you can't trust a word out of their mouth. I don't know why the U.S. doesn't have a freaking policy. We have a policy that says, not that we follow it, we're not supposed to negotiate with terrorists. I don't understand why we don't have the policy yet that we shouldn't be negotiating with Russia at all. This isn't the United States fight, to be perfectly clear. The United States of America is no longer supplying, paying for munitions to be going into Ukraine Trump's actually made it and signed it so that NATO can purchase those weapons. We will, you know, like produce those weapons, and those weapons will then get shipped into Ukraine. That's fine for them to do. U.S. actually helps our economy. We're not purchasing crap. It's going in there. Ukraine's actually stepped up their production of munitions. Talk about the Flamingo here in just a second. How many more of those things are expected to start producing in the very near future, and the effects that they've already taken place on the battlefield. It's already proven itself. But NATO thinks that it's can just deter Russia from doing anything at this point. And the only thing they are teaching the Russians is they are desensitizing them to NATO. Every single time a Russian bomb falls in Poland, a Russian drone smashes into Poland, there is some incursion over into Latvia. Whatever it is that the Russians are doing, every single time that happens, all NATO is doing by not responding and pretending and closing their eyes and shoving their head in the frickin' ground and pretending like it didn't happen, the only thing they're doing is desensitizing Russia to NATO. Russia may very well have been scared of NATO. Very well may have been scared of NATO doing something to get rid of them, because, you know, the world that you grew up in is the world that you know, the information you're given, that's what you got. And so you get, you know, in this frickin' mind frame, which is why, you know, the re-education of the Palestinians is something that undoubtedly is going to have to take place. You guys missed my frickin' stream last night. Please, for the love of God, go back and watch that. Maybe I'll even play that video that crazy lady this morning. But that's the mentality of a lot of these Russian people, right? The statement that Putin came out with talking about NATO promised not to expand one inch to the east. That by Gorbachev himself came out and got disproven. Gorbachev himself came out in 2014 and stated that the United States and NATO had abided by every single portion of that meeting, and that Putin took it out of context, highly out of context, and that everything that was agreed upon was met and then some. There was never a promise for NATO to expand, not to expand. And by the way, just the term NATO expansion within itself is ridiculous. NATO doesn't invade other countries and take over territory. Other countries, sovereign countries who have the sovereign right to do so, decide that they want to join NATO, and they petition to join NATO, and then NATO either accepts and or rejects them based on so many factors. NATO's not going into these countries and frickin' like forcing them to comply and forcing them to join. The idea that NATO expands is absolutely ludicrous. It's about as ludicrous as the idea of the special military operation. It's about as ludicrous as people believing that little green men went into Crimea and that Russia wasn't responsible for it at the time. It's about as ludicrous as the idea that 200,000 Russian troops were stacked on the border and they didn't intend on invading Ukraine. There was never a freaking promise for NATO expansion. Ever. NATO expansion within itself is Russian propaganda. But let's get back to what the Secretary General just said. He talked about security guarantees. He didn't talk about Ukraine joining NATO, but what he did say is that they need something other than the Budapest Memorandum. And all of that is very, very true, because the Budapest Memorandum was violated, and I'm glad I just went on a rage about that, because it didn't work. Same thing with the Minsk agreements. Didn't work. So they need something else in place to deter Russia from further aggression inside of Ukraine. Because you had the Russian aggression of taking over Crimea, you had the Russian aggression of their incursion into eastern Ukraine, and then you had the full-blown invasion in 2022. Not to mention Russia meddling in the elections, which they promised not to do in the Budapest Memorandum. We couldn't do anything about it because there was never a way for us to be able to do anything about it. That is what the NATO Secretary General brought up. And that is going to be a different international coalition that is supposed to defend Ukraine. So, Lavrov, basically, is lying. I don't know how else to state that. Lavrov is lying. Off that high horse, let's talk about this. Tulsi Gabbard Bard sharing intelligence with Russia-Ukraine negotiations with the Five Eye partners. Holy freaking crap. All of that happened back in July. It was a memo dated on July 20th where Tulsi promised, or Tulsi had said, you know, we are basically not sharing information with the Five Eyes as it goes down to these different negotiations. And it took me a minute to try to figure out why. And the only thing that I can think of is that what we didn't want happening, because Canada is one of the Five Eye countries, and Canada is also heavily involved with Ukraine. And if for some reason we're negotiating with Putin, is the only reason I could think that this could have even came out, is if Trump and Putin are negotiating and there's intelligence cables that are saying that Putin's going back or Putin's doing X, Y, and Z, that we wouldn't want that information to get leaked to Ukraine, because that could throw off the entire deal. That's why. Oh my goodness, man. NATO being weak has allowed Russia to continue. Yeah. NATO being weak, United States of America being weak, all of that stuff, in my opinion, is what has allowed Russia to continue to do the different things that it wants. And everybody that thinks for some reason that you can negotiate with Russia, for some, like somehow that you can negotiate with Russia, that you can bring them to the table, or that, you know, that any of this is going to like bring an end, it's not. You have to have those security agreements in place. Like, you actually have to have it guaranteed that if they do it again, they're going to get smashed. And we're circumventing the NATO portion, bringing this up. By the way, this strike right here, come on, video, play. This strike right here was accomplished by one of those flamingos, right, that we're about to talk about, that Ukraine is currently producing about one a month. And by the end of the year, they are currently ramping up productions on it. These are all the field tests that they've done of the flamingo. These are successful strikes that they've knocked out on Russian positions. There goes the flamingo itself taking off and doing flamingo things, right? So Ukraine is now going to be producing more of these on their very own. They can produce, I think they're predicted to do up to 7 a month as of right now, which is beautiful. That's good on them for being capable of doing that, right? This sucker has the capability, what was it, 3,000 kilometers? 3,000 kilometers. So they can strike deep within Russia. Ukraine solved the problem of NATO weapons and equipment only being allowed to be used for specific targets. Now, Ukraine has the ability, and I know some people are going, well, 7 a month, that's not that many. Yes, it is. Especially when you think about how this sucker has evaded Russian systems and has been able to target things very successfully. Currently 7 a week. Currently 7 a week, 1 a day. But I believe they said that they were going to be able to ramp it up, Texas, to 1 a day, or 7 a day, if I remember right. But either way, they're going to be producing 7, even 7 a week. Let's say even they produce 7 of these suckers a week. That's 7 targets inside of Russia every single week that Ukraine can actually go after. This thing is going to get marched off the production line and get fired over and start going after all of these targets. And if Ukraine doesn't even change what they are currently going after, if Ukraine doesn't even change what they're going after, they just stick to the oil refineries. At 7 a week, in no time at all, Russia is going to be SOL. They are not going to have money to fight this war. 30% of Russia's GDP, I'll say it again, comes from oil. And so if they go after Russian oil and they're capable of doing that, great. Now they can take those other NATO-supplied munitions, and instead of targeting oil refineries, instead of targeting all of these other things, they can actually go after different targets that NATO is okay with, right? And so all this did was free up more munitions that are being supplied to Ukraine to actually go after legitimate Russian military targets. I mean, not that the oil is not a legitimate target, but picture now, instead of using like these long-range drones and all of this other crap to try to get in there and take care of this, they just end up using the Flamingo. And then you take those different cruise missiles and whatnot, and you start going after the S-300s and the S-400s, and you start knocking those out, and how much more effective all of their aircraft and air support and everything else is going to be. I've got a video from like a Russian tank commander from the front line out in the east talking about just how crap they are, like just how thinned out they are. And the guy, by the way, he's like freaking looks like he's 80 years old, like he's old as sin, right? And to even have that guy on the front line, and there's nothing that I have seen so far about the Russians' current state of their military that suggests that they're in any position whatsoever to launch a massive offensive and actually get somewhere. They've been depleted. Patrick Loudon, could they do more severe damage to the Crimean Bridge? I don't think they need to be perfectly honest with you. I personally don't think they need to. You know, I ran a huge analysis of the Crimea Bridge the last time that you ended up having the explosion take place and try to take the bridge out. Would it be effective to take that bridge out? Would it be good for them to take that bridge out? Absolutely. But that thing is built like a dang fortress. I mean, I don't think people understand, number one, how strong that bridge actually is and how much it would take to actually take out those different support pillars and everything else. And current munitions and everything else that we have is just kind of designed to do it. I think the way to take out that Crimean bridge would to take essentially a MOAB and just let that sucker float down and detonate over top and then have that pressure collapse multiple sections of the bridge. But even then, Russia would be capable of rebuilding it. So you would have to just continue to target that thing forever because of like the hardest thing to take out is going to be that support structure underneath that sank down into the ocean bed. Those pillars and everything are so thick, it's absolutely insane. And so like when I did that explosive analysis of it, yeah, it's huge. Good luck taking that sucker out. It's insane to me, you know. There's much more effective things that you can do. I think it's in my opinion, I think going after that bridge is more or less In my opinion, I think going after that bridge is more or less like a political hit or a media point to be able to take out that bridge because there's other effective ways and other things that you could target. Right? That is a very hard target in order to take out. Very, very hard target in order to take out. So, yeah, I don't know. Texas has blown up my phone, so now I got to go over and read his messages and see what he said. The Max Pros. Yeah, no, Max Pros are great. I actually heard that they're going to stop production of those if they haven't already, and that is going to go away. So, I don't know, man. I know that when you take a blast inside of a Max Pro, it doesn't feel really good and you're really sore. I know that when you take a fall from a climbing, you're out climbing and you happen to take a really long fall in a whipper and you slam into a freaking, you know, rock face and break a couple ribs, that's also really painful. And following an explosion and following a, like massive whippers and things like that, it gets really, really hard to sleep because it's just really, really painful. But you know what actually helps you sleep at night, and I can personally attest to this, is a really well-made mattress. When you have lived through the real stuff, you know how important it is to recover, and it all starts with sleep. That's where Ghostbed comes in. Every mattress in the Ghostbed collection is built to help your body reset. They've engineered with cooling materials that pull heat away from you while you sleep, so you're not waking up drenched in sweat, especially in the middle of the summer. And that makes a big difference. And it's not just about staying cool, it's about support too. Ghostbed's exclusive ProCore layer reinforces your back and hips so you wake up feeling better, not worse. No sagging, no soft spots, just durable materials that hold up over time. The team behind Ghostbed has been making mattresses for over 20 years, and they know what works, and they don't cut corners. That's why over 60,000 people have given them a 5-star review. Not sure which mattress is right for you? Take the mattress quiz on their site. It's quick and you'll get personalized recommendation based on how you sleep. You'll also get a 101 night sleep trial, fast and free shipping, and a 20 to 25 year warranty. And if you need help, you will talk to a very real person at their Florida headquarters. Not bots, no runaround. Right now, Speak the Truth listeners can save even more. Head on over to ghostbed.com/Rob and use code Rob to get an extra 25% off on the top Ghostbed's already discounted prices. That's ghostbed.com/Rob, promo code Rob. Upgrade your sleep with Ghostbed, makers of the coolest beds in the world. I want to thank Ghostbed for sponsoring today's live stream. Now we're going to take you guys out of Russia and we're going to go over and we're going to talk about Ramallah. Ramallah. Israeli Defense Forces, it would be a good idea to launch a freaking massive operation over there. And over the last couple days, they've actually detained well over 200 terrorists. 200 terrorists that were going to be responsible for planning out future attacks. Now, just the other day, I ended up showing you guys some footage of drones and things like that that ended up being intercepted by the Israelis that had weapon shipments and things like that that were coming into the house. House of Karma came in gifting out 20 Speak the Truth memberships. Hell yeah, brother. Matt just pulled an AK guy SDI sneaky promo with Ghostbed. Yes, I did. That's exactly what I did. 200 in this operation, allegedly. that they were able to take off the streets. Initially, it was like, hey, they launched this one and they released this footage where they went out and they captured just like, you know, two or five guys, something like that. But now it's like over 200 are the, some of the numbers that are being reported that they actually were able to pull off the street. What's that tell you? Well, that tells you that you have some very big issues at hand. You have other terrorist organizations that are plotting to go and attack Israel as Hamas is fixing it stamped out over inside the Gaza Strip. And so Israel continues on with their operations of, you know, targeting these dudes and going and taking them out. Probably the other thing that I think, I'm sorry, did I say 290? Not 290. And probably the other big thing, which I'm going to bring up right now, is the fact that Gideon's Chariot 2 is being launched. It's already started. I reported on it earlier this week where they're going in and around Gaza City and they're starting to secure the tunnels over there. As they secure those tunnel systems, they're taking their sweet time to pretty much isolate, all right, Gaza City. Now, as they do that and as they begin that operation, the real question is going to be, how is Iran going to respond? Because once they launch a full-blown assault on Gaza City and actually go to stamp out Hamas, then you have the very real possibility of Iran answering it back. Because remember, Iran stands up for Palestine and they don't want Israel going off on Palestine. And Iran still has the ability to respond. Nuclear weapons capability, totally diminished at the point. Are you 100% sure it's Ramallah? That's what I got told, Danny. I got told it was Ramallah. I got told that they had that assault that I just had up on your screen of them taking out two. And then I got told, I heard it was like upwards of 90 to 100 plus terrorists that they ended up taking off the streets over the last week. And I have seen several videos, particularly focused in Ramallah, of them going over and scooping dudes up. At least that's where it's being reported and coming out. I mean, they're going around not just conducting raids like you ended up seeing where they go over and they do snatch and grabs, but they were also doing specific like undercover ones where they're traveling around in vans. They're going over and like just pulling people over and just like snatching them and shoving them in and driving off. So I've seen a bunch of operations like that over the last week. So I do find that reporting to be credible. Just throwing that out there, Danny. Chris is coming in, gifting out a Speak the Truth membership as well. Appreciate that, man. Now we're going to move on. We're going to talk about this. Famine Review Committee came out, the IPC. IPC. Famine confirmed for the first time in Gaza. So one, anybody that claimed there was famine in Gaza prior to today's date, IPC would totally disagree with you. They ended up coming out. Now, for those that don't know, this ends up being a subset of the UN. This report that's currently up on your screen comes from the WHO or the World Health Organization. And I'm going to bring up specifically the report from the IPC because, in my opinion, it's absolute trash. And I'm going to rage about it for a minute before I open everything else up. More than 500,000 people in Gaza are trapped in famine, marked by widespread starvation, destitution, and preventable deaths, according to a new IPC analysis released today. Famine conditions are projected to spread from Gaza government to Deir Hala and Khan Yunis governance in the coming weeks. By the way, Khan Yunis was supposed to get evacuated, period. So how it's going to spread in there is a very good question because they also failed to mention the new water pipes and all of that crap that are being shuttled up over in there. Now, I can go over this entire thing. I can bring up and I can pull up the actual IPC freaking report right here that's on your screen. And we'll go down to, where is it at? Their executive summary. All right. So executive summary. And as you read through this, by the way, if you guys can't see this, it is 59 pages that they go over. I haven't had a chance because it just came out today to review and read the entire thing. But what I can do is sit here and point out to the executive summary right up top and tell you why it's agenda based and they're pushing it right at the same time that Israel is planning and currently moving on Gideon's Chariot 2 to go and retake Gaza City. The Famine Review Committee has determined that a famine, IPC Phase 5, is currently occurring in Gaza government. Further, the FRC projects famine thresholds to be crossed in Deir Hala and Khan Yunis governance in the coming weeks. Weird, because you're going to see here in a little bit that they said that they, well, actually, you're not going to see it. I'm not going to go over it. Deep down in this report, it actually tells you that they didn't even bother doing a review on Rafah because it had been vastly evacuated and that basically nobody lives there. And the same thing's taking place inside Khan Yunis right now. Allegedly, the people are supposed to be getting the heck out of Dodge and moving up out of there in order to make it out. As this famine is entirely man-made, it can be halted and reversed. Right up there. As this famine is entirely man-made, it can be halted and reversed. The time for debate and hesitation has passed. Starvation is present and spreading rapidly. There should be no doubt in anyone's mind that an immediate, at-scale response is needed. Yeah, same thing I've been screaming for a while. You need an at-scale response. Any further delay, even by days, will result in total unacceptable escalation in famine-related mortality. So they're saying that every day this goes by, famine is continuing to escalate, i.e. people are dying from not being able to eat. And then the very last line, and here's where they cross into politics. If a ceasefire is not implemented to allow humanitarian aid to reach everyone in the Gaza Strip, as if essential food supplies and basic health, nutrition, and wash services are not restored immediately, avoidable deaths will increase exponentially. So, the Famine Review Committee, on everything that they do, decides that the only way to make sure that civilians aren't dying from starvation is by having a ceasefire. That's the only thing they can figure out. And remember, this is the IPC, right? Your subset of the UN, all right? That's what they say. Now, it's funny that they say that. I'm just going to pull up this next excerpt because maybe you guys will be able to read it a little bit more clear, I hope. I don't feel like searching for the particular PDF page. I put a post together on this. I went a little bit deeper down, and I've got two highlighted sections, one right here in the middle, and one right here. It said, there are current restrictions in place which effectively limit the number of trucks, metric tonnage, and types of commodities allowed to enter. There's not. There is not current restrictions in place. This is a lie. As a matter of fact, it is so wide open that there is food stacked up inside of Gaza waiting to get picked up by the UN's World Food Program, and they can't deliver it. Over 93% of the humanitarian aid that's picked up by the World Food Program is looted. That's a fact. And it's not a fact that Matt's stating, that is a fact that the World Food Program is stating. They only have 60 drivers that they contract out of Gaza to pick up and deliver. 60 drivers. And so here you have the Famine Review Committee saying that this needs solved. Do you realize that at the current scale of operations, even if the World Food Program was able to deliver 100% of the stuff they pick it up, not 6.5%, to actually deliver 100% of what they pick up, you're still only looking at maybe 1.3 meals per Palestinian per day? That's absolutely egregious. And they are saying the only way to solve this problem is by a ceasefire. And I'll remind you that over this summer, the UN halted operations because of attacks. For a week in June, the UN halted operations because of attacks on their convoys by terrorists inside Gaza. And they demanded that the Israelis provide them more security. And then we'll go to this highlighted section right here, based on that information that I just talked about. Recent changes requiring all humanitarian aid trucks to be accompanied by Israeli security escorts have impacted humanitarian logistics operations. Why does that exist, IPC? That exists because of Hamas stealing the humanitarian aid and not giving it to people. You got fat dudes eating bananas in tunnels, bragging about it on frickin' Hamas channels. This is not a fair report, and it does not paint a correct picture of what's going on just based off of what I have read so far. They fail to point out the World Food Program's failures inside of Gaza. They fail to point out that the World Food Program, even if they had 100% delivering capacity without it being stolen, let's say there was a ceasefire and they stopped stealing all their stuff, which isn't going to happen, because then Israelis are going to be out. It's going to turn into 100% of their stuff. The only reason that 6.5% ends up getting delivered is because Israel set up humanitarian aid corridors that they lock down and that they govern and they watch to make sure that Hamas and armed militants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, aren't there waiting to steal all the frickin' aid. And so that ceasefire, if they accept Hamas's portion, would mean that all the Israeli forces would pull out of Gaza, and then the UN would be in there doing this shit on their own. And how much of their stuff is going to end up getting stolen? 100%. So it's not going to get delivered. And again, it's only 1.3 meals. So again, it's not going to solve that problem. The real problem is the UN not delivering food to the final destination, the UN refusing to have any sort of armed escort whatsoever, because the Israelis still are not allowed to go side by side with them throughout Gaza, and the UN not picking up the humanitarian aid on the Gaza side of the border. It is stacked up. Days worth, if not weeks worth, of humanitarian aid is just sitting out in the sun and freaking rotting. And yet, this is the report that the IPC put out demanding a ceasefire. Literally, if a ceasefire is not implemented to allow humanitarian aid to reach everybody in the Gaza Strip, that's it. They want a ceasefire. They're pushing for a ceasefire. It's pretty sad. It's very, very sad. It's so sad, in fact, that videos like this are widely ignored.
قمنا بإعداد وطهي وتجهيز وتوزيع وجبات الطعام الساكنة شمال قطاع غزة.
I mean, anybody? These aren't old videos, by the way. These are recent videos within the last couple weeks. These aren't old. Now, I know I've touched on not everybody has the ability to afford this food. Not everybody has the ability to go out there and get it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this is just getting ridiculous. If I had chosen different music, I'd have chosen, yeah, sure, choose different. I don't give a crap. But it's proving a point right here. And the point is that somehow you have this vast discrepancy inside of Gaza with the have and the have-nots, just like everybody else in society, in my opinion. I think it's absurd to claim that these people aren't hungry, right? Because there is tons of people that are pouring up over into freaking Gaza in order to get this crap, going out to those GHF distribution sites to ensure that they end up getting it, is all that's going on. I'm going to open up the Discord because I want to hear from you guys about these two major topics that we're going over. I want to hear about the Russians and Lavrov and what they had just stated. And I want to hear from you guys about, this freaking famine in Gaza. So if you guys want to come up, I would love to hear from you. I just opened us up over inside of the Discord. You guys are welcome to jump up over in there. It is now up and running. Get up over in there because I want to hear from you. I want you guys to raise your hands. I want you to come up and I want you to speak on the subject because it's driving me absolutely insane. Have you an idea that the UN really understood the experienced military in the field? No, I don't think the UN understands a dang thing whatsoever. Matt, I like that shirt. Well, thank you, Linda. You can get it from nfgapparel.net. You can go over there and go get yourself one. They're really, really kind of nice. I love them. This whole thing is just freaking nuts. There should be Hamas hunting club shirts over there as well. Go get you a Hamas hunting club shirt. It's insane. It's absolutely insane to me that all of this is still currently taking place. Ladies and gentlemen, please come up. I want to hear from you. Get your butt up over in the Discord if you want to have a discussion on this. I most certainly want to hear from you. I most certainly want to hear what you have to say about it. I don't think that anybody really understands what Russia is doing. I don't think that anybody really understands what the UN is doing. I don't think, because all of this has been so clouded with mis and disinformation, that anybody really understands what is going on over there. I don't think they understand that at all. And it really pisses me off that there's so much like information, like false information that's floating around, that people can't figure out which way is up. And it drives me nuts. Texas, what's up, bud?
I don't know if you can hear me, but I got no audio on Discord.
You got no audio on Discord, huh? All right. I guess I'll have to close it out and try to get back in. This tends to happen a bunch, man. Let me see if I can disconnect and then jump back in. Let's see if that solves it. And then I'll go ahead and move myself up. How about now? Can you hear me now?
There it is.
Okay. Dude, it drives me insane every single time. It's always problems with Discord. Okay. So talk to me, my friend. Lavrov.
Crazy.
What the hell?
Oh, he opened his mouth. I think my professional and stupid opinion is Putin and Trump are completely done. They have, like, it's going to take a lot more for, obviously, for this to be admitted and, like somehow actually be made for people to see it. But if you look deep, I think Trump told Putin, you come here, I'll give you a nice welcoming. Let's find a way. I'll convince Ukraine to give you part of what you still don't have, but you got to work with me here. Let's just end this. Mm-hmm. And I strongly believe that Putin said, yeah, I'm down. And because he wanted the photo op. He wanted the
you think he was
the
just
whole
playing
world
Trump?
To talk about. I mean, you don't think so?
I kind of do.
You know that like it's just seen. Like they went back claiming, oh, what a great meeting. Trump agreed to everything that we asked for and stuff like that. We know that that's not true because even Trump said that. And the first words out of Trump, like one of the first words out of Trump's mouth is like, there's no deal until there's a deal. Like, I don't know. I see like Trump and Putin got like, and then after that, he still gave him a chance. And I think that strike yesterday, I looked as deep as one can look into Flex LTD. Mm-hmm. That company has zero government or any dual
zero
use
funding. I tried.
Not only
USA,
funding, they don't have any
pulling
products that could be dual use.
None. And I went deep on that. You know, I told you I was like, wow, this is interesting. Now I got to dig in this company because again, I want to like. I am looking for information that Russia could have used to say that Flex somehow, this massive company traded on the NASDAQ, somehow could have been contributing to the war effort, thereby making a legitimate military target. There's no information whatsoever that suggests
you know,
it. None.
We both know that Russia jumps on a message after striking something pretty quickly, usually within the same day.
And that's exactly what they did.
You have strikes on Kiev. It's saying what?
Well, Lavrov came out.
I didn't say
it. Lavrov came out. Maybe you missed it. Lavrov came out and he said Zelensky basically didn't agree to anything in the summit.
No. I'm talking about when they strike something, they say what they hit.
Oh,
they
right.
usually come out and say, we hit a military base with 15,000 NATO special forces commanders. And
they
usually just put out messages of what they hit. We all know it's nonsense.
Blowing up recruiting stations. This was some guy
apartment. They hit a hospital and it, apparently it was a NATO base or they hit something that
nothing
I know what they
one,
hit.
Right?
And so there was nothing. So, and here's another thing, you know, usually when they hit a target, they have targets that they want to hit, and obviously they'll send drones and rockets at the same area because it'll overwhelm air defense. They didn't do any of that here. They just sent multiple. Obviously, some of these missiles were intercepted along the way towards it, but some made them through. But it wasn't a combined anything on that. It was just a double tap. Caliber cruise missile strike. And it was nothing. There was nothing more to it. There wasn't any drones. There wasn't any other targets in the area.
Remotely close.
I think that was like another like kind of like poke at Trump.
That's exactly what it was. There's no other way to interpret that because again, no information whatsoever that suggests that it's contributing to the Ukrainian war effort whatsoever. Flat out, it wasn't a legitimate military target. Flat out. And to have them do that.
I think it was the
to have them
Trump. It was the.
Go ahead.
I think it was to poke Trump because Trump had said multiple times when we were talking about security guarantees back in the day for when it came to the original minerals deal. Trump was saying, yeah, if we're involved, then automatically nobody will do anything, obviously, if it's American. And it was like, oh, so if American companies are going to roll in and dig out minerals, nobody's going to hit those sites or something like that. It's going to be protected. So it's like poking at Trump saying, yeah, this is the biggest American-owned company in Ukraine, and we just hit it straight in the middle of the nose, you know? Like,
yeah,
that's what I see. That's how most Ukrainians are seeing it. I asked a lot of Ukrainians, especially locals, like, I've told you, I'm pretty local to where that was for the most part. And to be honest, like, I asked people are like, no, this is an absolutely, because, like, it's close to the Hungarian border. It's close to the Slovakian border. It's not like anything that would potentially maybe be like, oh, this is a factory and it was like producing drones or something. No, it's like, it's an absolute, like, poke. I see it as a 100% poke, and so do the locals and the Ukrainians.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that. There's no other way to interpret it, in my opinion. And as I said before, if there was ever a sign that they are not coming to the table, this would be it. Because they're now, in my opinion, lying through their teeth, saying that Zelensky is not giving up on NATO and Zelensky is not giving up on all of these things. Dude, Putin knew this NATO Secretary General was taking part in that meeting when he accepted that phone call. And it wasn't because Zelensky wanted to join NATO, it's because he wanted legitimate security guarantees. And to be honest, this plan provides security guarantees way quicker than Ukraine joining NATO. Like, if the war ended tomorrow, we could have security guarantees in place for Ukraine. If we didn't do that, then Russia could simply launch another incursion into Ukraine, and Ukraine would be right back at war and not be allowed to join NATO. So I think if you really want to just break it down into common sense, that's where it's at. Super Elite, what you got, friend? See you up here. I see you. I wonder if you've got a different take on this. You're going to have to unmute yourself there, Super Elite. Nobody can hear you.
There we go. How you boys doing?
Doing very well. How are you?
All right. Dealing with a little bit of shit in my life, but then again, who isn't? I mean, a lot of people in Ukraine are dealing with a lot of shit in the front lines, with a lot of fucking mud, and it's getting cold now, so, you know, I can't complain. Let's put it that way. But along the lines of what's happening with Putin, I mean, I'm kind of looking at this as a chess game, right? And if you're familiar with what a gambit is in chess, it's an overextension of your pieces to try and get a quick checkmate, you know. However, when you go for a gambit and it doesn't work and they counterattack, it leaves you off a lot worse off than before you'd started the gambit. And I see Russia as playing the same stupid gambit over and over again militarily. I mean, completely overstretching their supply lines. And I mean, when you think about it, it's only about 400 kilometers from the capital, Moscow, to the front lines where that war is taking place. And their logistics are shit. You know, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, logistics are hell over there. Well, the problem is it's a supply and logistics issue for them now. Supply and logistics issue for them now. And so, like, they're attacking both sides of that.
And I mean, at this point, you know, like, this, the ongoing sanctions and everything, and, you know, basically, like, NATO being able to go ahead and fucking write the U.S. a carte blanche for anything they want from Raytheon, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and whoever, go ahead and fortify this bottleneck that the Russians are throwing everything into, right? The proverbial meat grinder. The longer that goes on, the worse it gets for Putin. I mean, you know, unfortunately, that does come at the cost of the units, you know, that are there on the ground manning that funnel. You know, but the longer this war goes on, the worse it is for Russia. You know, like I was talking in the chat with someone, like Putin is pretty much left like three generations of Russians to come. You know, the effects that this war is going to have on Russian society when everything is said and done, it's not going to be nice. Let's put it that way.
Russian society is screwed at this point. The amount of men that are to be lost, and if Russia continues on with this effort, like I said, I mean, there was the report that came out that stated, like, just to push into the other province or to push in the other oblast, you're talking about 2 million KIA or WIA. That's twice their active duty size as they speak. And so you're talking just for them to advance and break through that zero line and take another, you know, oblast over, that they're going to have to refit their force one time completely over. Just to do that. And there is not a snowball's chance in hell they're going to be capable of doing that. They can't. It's well, like physically impossible, you know, for them. They've already lost too many.
Well, I mean, they can try eventually. The longer that this goes on, I mean, let's also get some, you know, like Putin is in Russia, and Russia is really not run entirely by Putin. It's run by a collective of oligarchs. Okay, and if you don't believe me on this, I'm sure Texas will back me up on this because he knows for damn sure how it works over there. You know, and a lot of people are looking at Putin like, you know, we're all hurting right now. You know, it's 5-6 people that have a lot of well lost over the past years. And they're all looking at each other, you know?
Yeah.
We really want to keep going with this guy at the helm of the ship.
Yeah, I think you look at like even the early days of the war when freaking Prigozhin tried like a coup against him. That was years ago, and they weren't happy back then. And I know for dang sure that they're certainly not happy right now. I want to go over to No-Mames. He's been waiting patiently and see if I can get some commentary in from No-Mames, see if he's got a different take. Sir, we cannot hear you. We cannot hear you. I see that you are not muted, but I've got zero volume coming through on your side. Discord's been a little bit glitchy today, so you might have to drop down and come back up, and we'll bring you back in. Rohan, just pulled you up to the stage, friend. What you got?
Let's see if you can hear me since
yes.
You couldn't hear him.
Crystal clear.
Because I know sometimes Discord's glitchy. Yeah. Oh, yeah, let him go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I got you now, No-Mames.
So, I mean, I think it's unlikely that it was a military target, but I don't rule it out just because it does have like dual use machinery.
Right? Yeah, sure.
And I mean, if you want to make the amount of drones that you make, they have all the machinery, they have the tooling for both like the FPV drones and the bigger ones, and the people, right? Expertise. It takes like 6 months to train like CNC operators, 3 months to like train injection molding like people to operate it, and just getting like an aluminum injection mold doesn't take that long. And you can pump out like 1,000.
None of the Ukrainian drones currently on the market use CNC.
The POV ones, yeah.
No, they're not. They're all 3D printed.
I've built over 20 drones for an oil refinery. So, like different ones.
I'm telling you what Ukraine has in service right now. I'm telling you if it's physically in service. It's 3D printed and it's they do cardboard cutout panels. And they do simple construction, like fiberglass, that's prefab tubing sizes. So it's like not you don't, like, I can build a drone without knowing how to touch the first screen of a button. I can build the Ukrainian FPV drone that they currently have in service, or even the bigger one. It's literally a modular kit.
Yeah,
in the,
and I know they use 3D printing and stuff like that as well for some of the smaller FPVs.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the 3D printers from that video that I had, like the open frame 3D printers, the materials they can print, I mean, the drone can be stable. I mean, that's just material science. It's like, again, it could be.
I'm not ruling it out that they haven't been making maybe some components or something. But again, that would take evidence.
The frame.
That would take evidence.
Frame? Well,
that would take. I mean, what I'm saying is, it would take evidence for that to be a legitimate military target.
And yeah, and I mean, they could have the evidence because all the cameras there are fully open and hacked. I took a look in the morning, all like 93 cameras in the factory and around, I mean, not the factory anymore because they were down, but they were up yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But all around, I think Ukraine banned them like 2 years ago, but they also banned the upgrades to the software. Okay. All the vulnerabilities are still there. Like, I can literally just up in any one of them without a login and password and like watch.
Okay, so then the question would be, why wouldn't Russia release that intel along with the strike that this U.S.-based company was manufacturing equipment for Ukraine and just validate that strike and make the United States look like absolute trash?
At the same time,
that's a great question, and I mean, it could still happen.
I don't think that a private U.S. company will Ukraine dual use.
No, I think. Sorry, I was answering
I also don't think that the Ukrainian government would try to strong arm an American company operating in Ukraine right now.
Well, I don't think they'd be strong arming it. I think they would simply be supplying them with money to do it. I mean, it's a business.
Yeah,
I'm going to play devil's advocate.
I mean, the employees are Ukrainian, right?
Correct. Over 2,000.
So I'm going to jump in. I just think that we're chewing on something that doesn't even make sense because this company is such a big multinational company.
Right.
This company is not just a company, an American company in Ukraine. I don't think that this company would go the route of jeopardizing their whole company, which is a massive multi-billion-dollar company, to just simply hide the fact that they start doing some military stuff in one of their factories.
Yeah, it'd be a fraction of the
business. Company that size. A company that size would have to go public about things like that.
They go into the defense industry. I just said it's not possible.
That's actually a valid point, man, because, I mean, that's, number one, like he said, multinational, like, it's a huge, huge company. It's traded on the NASDAQ.
You know where the headquarters of this company is?
I forget.
It's in Singapore.
Yeah.
This company is so big, this is not even their biggest plant. The one in Texas is bigger than the one in Ukraine.
Right. I mean, in Singapore, it actually kind of makes it worse, I guess, but okay.
No, Singapore is where the headquarters is. It's just because, again, they're a manufacturing company. What they do is they make products, not for themselves. They don't put the Flex logo on they make products for companies. Like, if I design a toaster oven and I want to brand my own toaster oven, I'm not going to make machinery. I'm not going to buy machinery to make my toaster oven. I'm going to go to a manufacturer that can go and manufacture that based off my design. They'll make the tooling for my logo and changes to modify it to my design, and they'll run a production line for it. This company, a company like this to go into anything defense in this big, the amount of people that have, like, this is a public, like, it's not a company that's like a little company that can just do things without it being like, there's a lot of countries and there's a lot of money in this. So, like, the company can't just, there's a board, there's people that invest money in this, there's corporations that own part of this company. They can't just go and take one of their plants and secretly start making military products. They would have to. It would probably be in their bylaws. Like, I will tell this straight, and Matt knows this, the last 24 hours, actually 30 hours now, I have dug as far as open source can go into this company. Like, in every aspect that I was able to find, this company is a simple company that is a manufacturing, that has manufacturing down to a pretty good level for the products that they specialize in. They make electronics for door locks for certain car manufacturers.
Hold on, let me state this, right? Like, because that's, we all know that that is what they're publicly involved in. What ended up happening was, when this thing got hit, I actually proposed this question to Texas when I first saw it, was maybe this is actually a legitimate military target. And so him and I dug in to prove that. And as him and I were digging in to prove that it is a legitimate military target, it actually disproved it. All of the research that we've done has disproven that this would be a legitimate military target.
I don't know how much research you did, but
I went so far as to dig into who owns the company, who's on the board of the company, whether or not those people have had previous ties with the government, whether or not any of the, you know what I mean? Like, I went balls deep on this thing, man.
I trust you. All I'm saying is that, I can't talk about it because it was from a client, which I can't like disclose.
Mm-hmm.
But a multinational company with in probably like 30 countries. We caught them on like fraud in 12 countries, and they're banned, and they're basically banned in the whole
world. That's great. There's a lot of
I'm digging and investigators and stuff, but.
But that's so.
I'm just saying it happened.
Well, it does happen. That has nothing to do with that.
Happens randomly.
So that does happen, right? Where you have companies that do things like that. But this is a completely different situation, right? Like, well known the amount of intelligence that's collected over inside of Ukraine. Well known the amount of FSB that's out there looking. Well known the amount of sources they have over there. Well known all of these things. And so the odds of this company getting popped inside of Ukraine would be huge. And so what they'd have to be weighing out, if you think about this, what they'd have to be weighing out is their risk versus reward. Their risk, obviously, is going to be what's up on the screen, right? Their risk would be that the freaking factory getting slammed, right? This would be their risk.
I mean,
and their reward would have to be greater than that. And when you start talking about the size of the company... What reward, what is the purpose for this company to do this?
Okay, so let's say, just like thinking out loud, let's say the FSB, GRU found something about them that they could blackmail them. Happens, I mean, those intelligence agencies are good.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I'm saying it's probably unlikely, but I'm saying it's not out of the realm of possibility.
It is so, okay, so I'll tell you this much again. Let's chew back. Why now? I'm asking you, here's another question. If this is true and this company produces drone parts, Ukraine has been very public with about the size of them and the numbers of drones that they produce monthly. And if, let's say, this is a company that manufactures anything for the military, we know that Russia's been hitting those sites. Apparently, they've been trying to, or at least claiming to,
right,
for the longest time. Why right after Putin and Trump have a scuffle, they go and they hit the largest investor, American investor in Ukraine, period. There is not a larger American-owned company in Ukraine. There isn't, by far.
I'm saying as of now, like, I agree with you, but I'm saying that we don't know none of us knows everything.
There's no possible way.
Like, intelligences know.
You're right. But is it more likely than not? But the question is it more likely than not that it is a civilian company operating outside of the military industrial complex? And right now, the evidence says that it is more likely than not that this is a civilian company operating outside of the MIC. Anything beyond that is a conspiracy theory that must be proven with facts. At this point,
I agree. Well, I'm saying we don't have all the facts. That's all I'm saying.
I'm not gonna keep.
I just said like it's unlikely, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. And the only other thing I want to say,
we heard that.
And then from yesterday, that lady that was like cheering that all of her kids, uh, and like were martyrs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she is probably super rich right now. I think I don't remember how much they pay per Jew that gets killed.
Yeah,
but like the pay per slay.
Yeah,
she's living very nice right now.
Yeah, she's living a good life, man. That lady was batshit crazy.
Yeah, I think it's like per if it's a soldier, it's around like $700 a month. It's a lot of money.
$700 a month. Yeah, the question soldier?
Is who's paying it? Is that money coming from?
From the PA, mostly from the PA, but this was in Gaza.
Yeah, so and where did the like PA get their money from?
Oh, from the whole world.
Right, keep going back and forth. And where does that come from? And where does that come from? Let's get to the source, right? You really want to stop a problem, you get to the source.
Okay, I mean, so yeah, just get I after mean, it, man. What are you? What are you declaring the source is? Just get after it. Just come out with it. What do you think the source is?
The source is pretty much Qatar right now. I mean, you know, who is funding like Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, and you know, I bet you Qatar? If you did a financial investigation into your friend Tony Aguilar, I bet you he's had checks cut to him.
Oh, I so agree with this. I don't think it's checks. I think it's crypto. But yes, we know that Qatar has been making crypto transactions to accounts that cannot be traced for a long, long time. And Matt, I made that claim a while ago.
They stopped like 2 years ago. Now they're doing just cash. Because I remember they...
Who?
Okay, fine.
Well, hold on. Where do the leaders of Hamas live? Where have they lived for the past, like, you know, 10 years? They haven't been living in Qatar, Gaza.
But I mean, they were able to walk
in hotels in Gaza with, like, hotels. Suitcases of cash.
Okay, Matt, I have one question. Just one question, and then... if we're going to go the Qatar route, there's a guy that I watched him make a statement. This was a statement, or somebody made a statement. I don't remember. Like, since when did the United States start doing this whole playing around? When October 7 happened, this could have been, the hostages could have been released within a very simple negotiation of telling Qatar, everything the United States does with you is completely cut, and we're going to put our special forces into your country, and we're going to hunt every one of the Hamas people until what we did is not that. We basically sat down and started talking to Qatar and started negotiating while these hostages were there. Never in the history before have we done something like that. Mm-hmm. The United States became a negotiation party with Qatar, with Hamas. Qatar has been involved in a lot of shady, shady things, including October 7th, and including a lot in Ukraine as well. I could tell you that oh my God, I'm done. I can't.
No, Qatar's been involved in shady things. That is a fact.
I'll tell you something else about Qatar. Geopolitically, they're very similar to Iran in that they don't have very many friends in their neighborhood.
Was Qatar the place that Tucker Carlson mentioned Qatar the other day? Hold on. Was Qatar the place that Tucker Carlson mentioned the other day when he was talking about Sharia law?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
So, just one thing. So, all the Hamas, like, even just civilians, they used to, like, dig the tunnel. So, what they did is they would, like, blindfold them, take them, like, in a truck, get in a tunnel, and then they used to pay them in crypto. They would go to this exchange. That exchange would take, like, 20% cut out of it, of the tax.
Yep.
And then... Chain analysis started going hard. Like, Israel started going hard with chain analysis. They tainted all their wallets, all the links to Hezbollah, and everyone. So, and there's a whole list. If you go to the Israeli MOD, there's a full list of, like, every day, like, I mean, it actually stopped. So every day, like, you would have more and more, like, crypto wallets that are tainted.
Yeah.
And they stopped with that because they realized, like, we're tracking it. And they just moved to cash. I mean, you have the Philadelphia corridor, you have tunnels around that.
Right.
You can bring, like, they would just bring suitcases of cash and they start paying cash.
Yeah. Well, I mean, clearly somebody's funding them. Clearly they're getting money through over there somehow. Not to mention all this pay for slay crap that's going on, right? But, like,
probably one of the most telling things that they have a lot of help internationally is just the fact that they have continued to fight for so long. They still have guns. They still have ammo. They still have mortars. And anybody that's fought in a war knows how ridiculous it is for these guys to have been isolated for this long and to still have bullets to frickin' sling. So the only thing that's really getting in and out of Gaza is humanitarian aid at this point. And so, if
not really. So the problem, the like 3-4 years ago, like the Egyptians went really hard on the tunnels between Egypt and Gaza,
mm-hmm.
and then they stopped, and now it's only like the Bedouins are there. The Bedouins, they work very simply, like they won't do anything. The military like stopped taking out the tunnels. They just build a bigger wall, and the Bedouins, if you pay the money, they'll just let you go through.
Yeah, I mean that was then, yeah. Right? But now the Philadelphia Corridor's been locked, so you can take just the time that the Philadelphia Corridor's been locked down.
It's not locked. The tunnels are still there. They used to flood
Correct.
Them. They're
the
still
tunnels
there.
Are still there, but then you have pretty much all of Rafah that's been completely and totally cleared out. And so then you run the risk of how many people are you moving in and out? And with the amount of ammo that's being fired, with the amount of explosives that they have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that would be a lot of bodies, because all of those tunnels are intertwined. It's not like a giant ant network.
I know.
So they would have to be above ground at some
point.
They
move a truck through those tunnels. It's not people. It's literally a truck.
Let's apply common sense now. Let's apply common sense now to these tunnels. They're big enough for a truck to go through, right? And so Israel, one, has had access to these tunnels. And so they are going to know where they come in and where they go out. And we know that they have popped out on the Egyptian side because Israel killed an Egyptian border guard when they were firing on him when they first went into Rafah. That's a fact.
Yeah, but as of now, Israel only knows about around, from what I heard, like from like sources that I trust, is around 60% of the tunnels. You have 40% that we still don't know, like where they are.
Right inside of Gaza.
Here's my question: out of those 60% of the tunnels that you do know of, why haven't you leveled them?
Well, I can answer that really easy. So out of the 60% of the tunnels I can answer that because of the amount of explosives and things like that it takes to actually get rid of those tunnels. And that's why that ambush that actually came out the other day, what you ended up seeing like throughout that, and not to mention what these tunnels pass through and under, right? That's why that ambush that took place the other day came out of one of those tunnels, and they had partially collapsed a portion of the tunnel to kind of like block it off. And that they had just kind of like routed their way around it. You know, they had just
that. They blow up usually.
It's not like you really have to worry about structural damage above the tunnels right now, do you?
But you have the hostages. You have the hostages. And I mean, I have a friend that there's a unit called like Diamond Yalom. That's what they do. They do like all the tunnel warfare and like blow it up. So I talked to my friend like a couple of days ago. He was on reserve duty for like 200 days. He by himself like blew up 120 like tunnel entrances.
Mm-hmm.
So just think about that, and that's still not like everything. He's like, we're finding them all the time,
and it's hard to describe how difficult it is to actually take these things out. I've personally been collapsing tunnels in my military career, and it is much harder than most people realize. It's not as easy as you would think. You know, people look at explosives and they think explosives will take care of this. It's not so. Like, there's some pretty advanced, unless you just go pee for plenty, which good luck trucking into that much explosives in the pee for plenty realm. There's like certain advanced charges you have to use in order to properly collapse these things so that they're decommissioned. And so like,
and some of them are a couple of miles long.
Correct. And that takes, and even then, right, using those advanced type charges, like on these tunnels in order to collapse them, it still takes a buttload of explosives to do it. And so you've got to understand that what you're doing during these combat operations is you're doing your best to balance out manpower and essentially how well and the employment of your explosives and equipment, right? basically, you can't use all of your explosives up front to take these tunnels out. You can't just use all of your explosives up front just to take these tunnels out, because then you're not going to have them to do things like we just see in this video right here.
One more thing is that there were some incidents where they did like blow them up, and since those tunnels are so long, like, you know how Gaza is like leveled? A lot of it is not from like fighter jets. A lot of it is from tunnels collapsing under buildings.
Exactly.
And there were some incidents where like they blew up like a 2 mile tunnel, and then you had like Israeli forces in some of that area they don't go all the way like the 2 miles in, right? They place explosive charges in a few sections. So you do take the risk of, you have to like get the forces that you kind of estimate that are near those tunnels so they don't collapse on them too.
Exactly. And then you look at other things like down on the Rafah border, right? Where you've got that main route that cuts pretty much right along the freaking border wall. And those tunnels obviously are going to cut through there. So if you go and you start collapsing that tunnel, now you're taking out a main supply route along that freaking border wall. You also risk collapsing the freaking border wall. Like, there's so many factors and considerations. And by the way, that's not an easy thing to correct. And as precise as you can get with some of these charges, they're still explosives. And so you are sending shockwaves through the ground that's going to weaken those different structures. And if you weaken those, and now you have a vehicle driving over them, because remember, they're terror tunnels. They're not exactly like perfectly engineered. They've got kids digging these dang things out and constructing them, right? So like not to mention the soil composition in some of these locations, and get closer to the coast, the more shitty they become. And so you can't just blow up every tunnel willy-nilly and hope for the best. Some of those things are probably likely going to end up getting filled with concrete, end up getting sealed off. Like, all sorts of weird stuff that's going to end up taking place.
Yeah. And I mean, the hostages, also, if you blow up a tunnel and you end up blowing up like part of the Egyptian wall, they're not going to be happy with you.
Well,
at all. That's going to be a big incident.
And thank you for mentioning the hostages as well, because it wasn't that long ago that there was a hostage body that was found concealed behind a false wall inside of one of those tunnels. So. You want to make sure that you can get all of these things back, and before you collapse these tunnels, you need to make sure that those hostages aren't in there. And even if they're not alive, you still want to be able to recover their bodies. And so these are all things that you risk by detonating these tunnels and blowing them to shit. It's a much more complicated situation than people realize.
A lot of them are booby trapped.
That's the other thing.
I've been in a tunnel that was 3 floors. It was like a 3-floor like tunnel. Like, you go down and down, right? And so they would, the same thing where they would like booby trap a house and put like a camera, right? So the dog would go in and everything is fine, and then like the troops would go in, and from the tunnel they would detonate the explosive once all the troops went like to the second floor, or like they just went to the building. So you have the same thing, like you go to the second floor of the tunnel and then it's booby trapped. Then you have like, I don't know, like an eight people who are like special forces, because like infantry don't go to the tunnels. It's usually two engineers and then some like the tier two special forces. So that's also a pretty big risk.
Right. So what I'm going to end up doing, guys, because I've got to get going right now. I've got two things though that I want to announce to everybody before I end up jumping off. Number one is, I've got an interview next week for 69X minutes, that I'm going to be doing with somebody. And that interview, let me grab his name so I don't screw it up. He was a whistleblower, that came out of Ukraine. Let me make sure I get his name right. Andrei Telezenko. Some people remember him because he came out saying that, Joe Biden was involved in the conspiracy with Hunter Biden being on the border of Burisma and several other things. He was working with Rudy Giuliani up in New York when he was Trump's attorney, going over how Russia/Ukraine was involved with the election fraud and stuff like that the Democrats were claiming at the time. And now he wants to come forward yet again. And so I've got a, and by the way, we revoked his passport. We revoked his visas and threw him out of the country. So I got an interview with him, and then that's taking place on Monday. Should be released that following weekend, I believe. And then the other thing that I get to do is I get to debate Scott Ritter on Tuesday at 1 p.m. And I'm really excited about that on the freaking about Ukraine, because that man has been just annoying the crap out of me ever since I came across him on X, and he continues to do it to this day. So I've got two big things coming up next week that I want you guys to check out. So, and of course, I got more information coming out for like my Israel trip and the particular people that I'm going to be meeting up with. Looks like going to be meeting with members of the National Security Council. Bibi is a possibility right now, situation dependent on his schedule. I will be going into Gaza. We'll be checking out the humanitarian aid. And I also got an invite as well to link up with Governor of Judea Samaria to be able to go and check out those areas as well. And I might extend an additional day after talking to a friend last night because everybody's seen, and real quick, because I know we got a couple Jewish people that are on the panel. Everybody has seen like the protests that are taking place over inside of Israel about like demanding a ceasefire and getting the hostages home, over 100,000 people. I have yet to see any real good interviews with what it is that they are asking for, right? And actually breaking down, well, do you actually want this conflict to end, or do you just want the hostages to be released and then stamp Hamas out? And so I might take an extra day to go over there and find some of these things, go over to some of the college campuses and actually talk with the people while I'm there. I got to check out my time schedule and make sure that I can do that. But those are all things that are coming up here within the next 30 days. And by the way, I'm going to be over there. Should be right about the same time that Gideon's Chariot is being launched as well. So if that's happening, Gideon's Chariot 2 is being like full blown launched into Gaza, then of course we've also got the possibility of the Iranian ballistic missile attacks and things like that that might be taking place.
I can link you up with some people from like the protests. I know a couple of them. Yeah. I'm going to be there at the same time. If I'm not in Gaza, then I'll send you the numbers of the people. Like I can link you up, but yeah.
I'm very curious to actually go and talk to them. I don't know why this hasn't been done yet. I don't know where they're pushing it out, but I know like the Jewish community here in the United States is a little bit confused. I know a lot of people are confused over what it is exactly that they're asking for. So I think it would be really good to just go get some on.
It's mostly like. First, like people are, their reservists and active duty are like are tired. Even though I mean they're doing rotations, but it's also the whole hostage situation. Like it's not like a partisan issue. It's like the whole like those protests are like 50,000 people going there. Right. And it's mostly like the families of the hostages, you know, they want the live ones and they want the bodies as well. So,
And I also get to meet,
you can understand that, right?
And I also get to meet some of the hostages that have been, released or rescued. So I get to be able to talk to those guys and gals as well.
Nice. So,
yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of things that are lined up next month for my Israel trip, and I'm really excited about it. And like I said, I'm thinking about extending an extra day over there. Need to talk to Jerome and make sure that he's going to be, able to kind of like help facilitate some of this stuff. Cause I trust him. Not that I don't trust anybody else, but I have had people try to link up with me and actually kill me. So I don't want to deal with that crap. I want to stick with people that I trust.
I won't kill you.
I'm not worried about that. I want to stick with people that I trust. You know what I mean? Or I'm just going to do it on my own. And cause that way it's safer. To be perfectly honest with you. So I'm not worried about it. You guys got anything else before I jump out of here? Because I'm about to close this sucker out. I got things I need to accomplish.
Everybody here wants to kill you. Have a lovely trip, man. Enjoy.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I'm not going anywhere between now and then. I'll be right here. You guys will be able to talk to me every single day, and I'll give you guys some updates that are coming out. Look forward to going into Gaza and checking some things out inside of there as well. So, all right, guys, you guys got anything else for me? Nope. Sounds good. All right. Thank you guys. Everybody that ended up coming up on the stage.
Have a good day.
You have a good day as well. Everybody, thank you for coming in, giving your opinions, whether or not Texas and I agree with them. I still appreciate a little bit of opposition and stuff like that that's coming back. It's always good to hear the other side. So thank you guys. Never be afraid to come up if you got an opposing point of view. And that's actually what we want to hear. So it's on Echo Chamber. So thank you guys. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. It's been a freaking blast this morning going over that and actually raising some pretty good questions. In the meantime, peace, love, happiness, and God bless, ladies and gentlemen. Out of here.